Tick number two, home late. Tick number three, likely to get up late, so won't need the bathroom when I'm getting ready for work. I show him Lizzie's room, which has become something of a work area. Obviously, all of this will be cleared, I say, gesturing to the supplies and course notes scattered everywhere. Aye, no bother. He declares the rest of the house grand, and I find myself wondering if I'd inadvertently blown the whole finding a new flatmate thing out of proportion. Have you any questions for me? I ask, finally showing him the living room. Are any of these couches sofa beds? Afraid not. And no other mattress or fold-downs in the house? No, I say, a little alarm beginning to ring in my mind. Why? Just that, me brothers like to come over when they can, you know, go out on the tear from time to time. How often? I ask, trying not to let it show that he's just waved a major red flag at me. Ah, you know, maybe twice a month, three at most. I pause. And how many brothers do you have? Eight. A look of horror must flash across my face because he quickly says, But don't fret, they wouldn't all come at once, like, maybe just half of them, maybe a few more at Christmas. Half? You've got to be kidding me. You, plus four brothers, equals five drunken men in my front room. Not bloody likely, mate. Well, that's good to know, I say, only just managing to hide the sarcasm. So, can I have the room? My brothers will be happy with a camping mat or that. They won't need anything fancy. I've just one other person to see, I fib, showing him to the door. But I promise I'll let you know just as soon as I can. Great, he says, oblivious to my lie. Well, I'd better crack on. Sure thing, I say, closing the door behind him with a weary sigh, realizing that Lizzie is even more irreplaceable than I thought. Chapter 13. Thanks for coming with me, Aunt Jane, I say, leaving the 1960s monstrosity of a building that is City University the following week. I can see now why you needed the moral support, she says, shaking off the tedium of the business class we've just sat through and drinking in the warm evening air. I managed to secure a place on a 10-week course soon after Aunt Jane and I discussed the idea of me focusing on jewelry design again, figuring it would be a good idea if I knew my proverbial arse from my elbow on all things business. Now, 6 weeks later, it's an understatement to say that my enthusiasm for spreadsheets, marketing, and cash flow is waning. I can't wait to be able to focus all my energy on design and not on the tedium of websites and accounts. All in good time, she says, as we cross the square and stroll towards a gorgeous little coffee shop I discovered close to campus. Shall we treat ourselves to a hot chocolate? I ask once we're nestled under a heated parasol in the cafe's courtyard, its walls covered in ivy. Does this mean there's trouble afoot? I laugh at my own predictability. You never miss a trick. So, what is it? She asks, once the waitress has taken our order of two hot chocolates with all the trimmings. Do you remember the wedding photographer? How could I forget? She says, with a mischievous smile. Well, I say, playing with a sugar sachet, trying to think of how to tell Aunt Jane I slept with Leo without shocking her too much. You went to bed with him, she says, in her entirely matter-of-fact way. Aunt Jane? How is it that I'm the one blushing? She shrugs with a little purse of her lips. I may be an old spinster, but I'm not completely oblivious to the ways of the world. Apparently not, I say, bemused by how Aunt Jane is still able to shock and surprise me after all these years. So, do tell. What's the problem? Was he a selfish lover? Too big? Too small? Or maybe there was nothing at all? Stop! I say, my eyes wide, my cheeks reddening by the minute. It's nothing to do with his performance. I cringe at the expression. Aunt Jane beckons with her eyes for more information. It's that he hasn't called since he left the next morning. Ah, she says, sitting back in her chair, absorbing the information. A hit and run. Something like that. I laugh, humorlessly. So you had a one-night stand. Who cares? I care. Why? Because I'd like something more with him. Our conversation is interrupted by the waitress bringing us our hot chocolates. Why would you want more with someone who sleeps with you then doesn't call? I scoop up a teaspoon of whipped cream. Because instinct tells me there's something more to his silence. I'm not sure how much we should rely on instincts. In my experience, they have a funny way of getting you into trouble. Maybe just chalk it up to being unlucky in love. Maybe, I say, thinking again about Aunt Jane and her someone many moons ago. Is that something you've been? Unlucky in love? At first, Aunt Jane's expression is hard, but it begins to relax as she wraps her hands around the warm mug, a memory coming back to her. Aunt Jane, was there someone special? There was, she says quietly, her eyes immediately softening. But I thought it was over a long time ago, until he came back into my life. It was Tom, wasn't it? Nonsense, she says, blushing faintly. I felt the sizzle between you at Hannah's wedding, despite what you told me. Don't be silly. But it was him, wasn't it? She smiles coyly, taking a long sip of her drink. It was. We've known each other since we worked in an auction house on Lotts Road, back in the late 60s. He was a porter, I was a secretary. At first, we used to sneak out back for a cigarette together. That grew into lunch, and then, before I knew it, we were eating dinner on the floor of my flat, which he helped me to decorate when I bought it. Tom told me about the motorbike and miniskirt. I wondered then if you had been a couple. What happened? Why didn't it lead to more? That's a good question. It sounds as if she's not quite sure of the answer. I suppose it was to do with me having ambition. I dreamt of becoming an auctioneer. Back then, that wasn't compatible with being a wife, let alone a mother.
Did he ask you to marry him?
He did, and I was sorely tempted to say yes. But instead, I asked him to wait, which he was happy to do, but his family didn't like. In the end, they forced him to find a better job, and he did. We saw less of each other, and when someone else came along, someone more conventional, someone happy to be a wife, he started seeing her, and eventually they married.
Did you know about her at the time? I ask,
wondering how I can have known Aunt Jane for 30 years and never heard this story. Oh, yes, and she was nice. I understood. Tom asked me if there was any chance of me marrying him because he wouldn't marry her if he thought there was. But I told him no. By that time, I was an auctioneer and I had my sights on my own business. I had no desire to be a wife, even if that did mean losing Tom.
So they married?
And had 3 beautiful children.
And did you keep in touch?
She shakes her head, a slight sadness misting in her eyes. It was easier not to. We bumped into each other once on the King's Road, sometime in the 80s. We went for dinner, had a few drinks, and it was clear the chemistry was still there.
Did something happen?
No, but we were both tempted. We exchanged numbers, but neither of us called the other. For months, maybe years after that meeting, I questioned if I'd made the right decision, putting my ambitions first.
And had you?
I think so. By that time I had the business, I was successful in my own right. Of course, it was easy to think I'd made the wrong decision when it felt as if he'd slot right back into my life. But the truth is, if we'd married when we were young, I wouldn't have had my career, and I'd have resented him for it. The relationship would have suffered.
So how did you get back in touch this time?
I ask, enthralled by Aunt Jane's story. Moira, his wife, passed away. It was his son who contacted me. He'd been given the job of calling his parents' friends. Tom had kept the slip of paper with my number on it, put it in their contacts book. His son must have thought I was a friend of his mother's.
Or maybe he knew his father needed you,
I say, caught up in the romance of it all. Well, whichever way, fate intervened. I didn't go to the funeral, but we met up a few months later.
How did that feel?
It felt no different from when we were 23 or 43. The feeling was exactly the same.
And so you're back together?
Well, not exactly, she says, and I feel as if a needle has just been whipped off a record.
How are they not together? I could have sworn something was going on between them.
I thought that's where you were going with this. He's been your wedding date twice. But you're not involved. She twists her lips uncertainly. Let's say we're exploring things slowly.
Why? Haven't you waited long enough?
Beatrice, she says, in a tone that says, be sensible. I'm 73.
So?
It's too late in my life for romance.
No, it's not.
I'm stuck in my ways, she says, dismissing the idea, and I don't want to run the risk of losing him again. Oh, well, that's a great attitude. Why be with someone you've loved all of your life when you could spend the rest of your life loveless and alone?
If it were meant to be, it would have happened long ago.
Aunt Jane, don't take this the wrong way, but you're talking rubbish. Didn't I say falling in love is all about timing? Both you and Tom couldn't be more established, and for once in your lives, you're both single. You have to grasp love whenever it comes, Aunt Jane. So, grasp it now.
I suppose you may have a point, she says, staring her hot chocolate in steady circles, a rogue sparkle forming in her eye.
Chapter 14.
How was Bali? I ask Hannah, a couple of days later, letting her into the hallway.
Implausibly beautiful.
For once she isn't in her running kit and sporting a slick of sweat. Her hair is swept back in a cloth headband, her skin clear and tanned.
Did Remy subject you to endless yoga?
She knew better. I spent most of my time on the beach reading.
Sounds pretty great, I say, taking her through to the dining room where Kat and Lizzie are busy unwrapping the Chinese takeaway for our girls' night.
Hi, Mrs. Remy, says Lizzie, lacking her usual vim. I've asked her several times what's up, but I can't get anything out of her.
Hello, Mrs. Jack.
You guys, says Kat, with a shake of her head and a smile.
You'll be Mrs. Henry in a couple of months, Lizzie reminds her. Then it'll be three Misses and only one Miss among us.
Speaking of which, says Hannah, her eyes glinting with mischief,
how did you and Sebastian get on at the wedding?
Oh my God, he was so hot, says Kat, pretending to fan herself. Tell me you've seen him again. The mention of Sebastian at the wedding brings Leo to mind and, inadvertently, a sheepish smile forms on my lips.
B, says Lizzie. Have you been keeping secrets?
No, I blurt out, clearly not telling the truth.
B Henshaw, we are not eating any of this food until you confess.
So you better start talking because I'm starving, says
Hannah, already sitting at the table loading up her plate.
What happened, B?
Kat asks with a slight look of disappointment in her eyes, as if, perhaps, she wishes I'd told her first. I take a seat. Nothing happened with Sebastian.
But,
she asks. But something might have happened with Leo.
No way,
Hannah splutters, only just containing a mouthful of ginger chicken.
Way,
I say, trying to sound breezy, helping myself to some special kung po.
Exactly what happened?
Asks Kat. Always the first to know when I'm not sharing everything. I circle my fork in the rice, avoiding eye contact.
B, says Lizzie.
You slept with him, didn't you? Says Kat.
I might have,
I say, raising my eyes sheepishly.
How did that happen?
Asks Hannah, putting down her fork.
I thought he was just a crush.
I thought he was out of your league, says Kat. How is anyone out of B's league?
Asks Lizzie. Thanks, Liz. I can always depend on you for support.
B,
says Kat, in that way of hers that tells me she's not going to drop it until I tell her what's going on. I finish a mouthful of rice, thinking where to begin.
We kissed at Lizzie's wedding.
What? Cries Lizzie.
How did I not know this?
How do any of us not know this? Asks Kat. Because I wasn't sure if it was just a wedding thing. He made some comment that made me think he'd slept with quite a few guests, and he told me during the day that I wasn't photogenic.
Well, that's bloody charming,
says Hannah, gnawing on a spare rib. Although kind of true, says Kat.
Kat,
says Lizzie.
Don't be mean.
She's right, Liz, I say, with a laugh, thinking of all the photos that make me look toothy with a double chin rather than broad-lipped and fresh-faced. There's one old-school photo in particular that Kat loves to rib me about, where I look remarkably like Ken Dodd. Anyway, it turns out he was talking about Dave. After Hannah's wedding, we went up to the heath and wound up back here, in bed.
Oh, God,
says Lizzie.
Wouldn't it be amazing if Leo turned out to be the one, and we had our fourth wedding of the summer?
I roll my eyes at Lizzie's wedding fever. I wouldn't jump the gun on wedding number four, says Kat. I'm having serious doubts about whether number three is going to happen. Lizzie gasps, her hand covering her mouth. Anna puts down the rib. It's something I've been wondering about ever since I saw Kat and Henry fight.
What do you mean?
I ask, selfishly relieved not to have to tell them that Leo hasn't been in touch since he left, leaving me feeling that I'm just another of his many wedding girls. But I'm also concerned about Kat. I called her a day or two after Hannah's wedding to make sure she was okay after her row with Henry, but she brushed it off, saying it was nothing. I still haven't got to the bottom of what it was about. She pushes her food round her plate.
I don't know exactly, it's just a feeling. Something's not right.
Hannah casts me an uncertain look. I glance down, remembering the room Lizzie told me.
It's just wedding nerves, says Lizzie.
It surprises me that she sounds so casually dismissive, given what she's heard about Henry.
But is it?
Kat asks, and I swear she's begging Lizzie to tell her what she knows. I almost start to speak, but my mouth goes dry and I reach for my drink instead. I've always told Kat everything important. How can I keep this from her? But then again, I can't ruin her marriage on the basis of third-hand gossip.
What's going on, Kat? Says Hannah.
I just feel he's not telling me something.
Have you asked him? I ask.
Yes, but he says I'm being paranoid or making stuff up.
Being paranoid about what?
Asks Hannah, and Lizzie shoots me a worried glance.
Let's forget about it, I'm sure it's nothing, she says, quietly returning to her food.
A slightly awkward silence falls over the table for a moment. I'm turning the rumour about Henry and the nurse over in my mind, and Lizzie's probably doing the same.
Is married life still bliss?
Hannah asks, breaking the quiet at last.
It's been better,
Lizzie says, which causes us all to do a double take.
Really?
I ask. How come?
We had a row.
Over what?
Asks Hannah, completely incredulous.
Who writes the best pillow notes?
Ha ha,
says Lizzie.
Actually, it was about that tour I mentioned. It's to the States, probably for the best part of a year. I don't want him to go.
Wow, I say, sitting back a little, taking in her news. A US tour is a big deal.
I don't think you can say no to that, Liz,
says Kat.
We had an agreement,
she says, uncharacteristically staunch in her delivery.
We couldn't live together before we married because of him touring and recording. He promised we'd live together for at least a year before he went away again.
Right, but he couldn't have foreseen a US tour, I say. She shrugs.
He needs to decide what's more important, me or the band.
Good luck with that, says Hannah, biting into a prawn cracker with an enormous crunch.
Anyway, in other news, says Lizzie. Carburetta's playing a festival in August near to home, and I've got tickets. I thought it might be nice for all of us to go. Give us a break from all this wedding malarkey.
Sounds great, I say, thinking it's a great incentive to get my collection together so that I might sell some pieces while I'm there.
I'm in. I reckon Remy will be too.
Me too,
says Kat, regardless of what Henry thinks.
Then it's decided, says Lizzie. Wellies and wigwams ahoy.
Kat and Anna head off together just a little after 10:30, with Lizzie telling them she'd stay a little longer to help clean up, though really it was because I'd asked her to stay back so we could chat about Kat and Henry.
Should we say something to her?
I ask, scraping the plates in the kitchen.
What would we say?
That there's a rumour going around about Henry?
But it's only a rumour.
You haven't heard anything more?
I saw him with a girl in question the other day, in the canteen.
And?
Well, they weren't kissing or holding hands over their soup.
But did they look, I don't know, caught up in each other?
Not so much that I need to mention it to Kat, she says,
taking the plates from me and loading them into the dishwasher. But what if something is going on and we don't say anything?
It's not our place to say, it's Henry's.
We should just let him marry Kat, even if he's cheating.
Lizzie releases a long sigh.
It's not as if we have any evidence.
Even though we had an inkling and she would more than likely eventually find out and possibly get divorced. Yes, because otherwise we run the risk of introducing something that isn't real, that makes Cat look completely paranoid, and possibly blows up their relationship. At least this way their relationship stands a chance.
I'm not sure how much I want it to, I mutter.
Meaning?
Meaning I don't think he's that good for her. They're always at each other's throats. And that's not like Cat.
But Henry isn't our choice, Bea. He's Cat's choice.
You're right, I suppose. Though I don't like it. So, we agree not to say anything?
Not unless there's something definite to tell.
Fine, I say, twisting a dishcloth, not feeling fine at all.
Chapter 15. So, what do you think?
Asks Kat 3 days later, showing me her choice of wedding venue. Honestly? I ask, looking at the beer-stained carpet and pine-clad bar of the hotel function room. I think it feels like the kind of place wakes are held for people without many friends or much money. Kat laughs. I admit it is on the utilitarian side, but you know me. I'm not interested in all the trimmings and trappings of a fancy wedding. I get that, I say, imagining the place full of Kat's friends and family. Even then I can't quite imagine away the wood chip wallpaper. She throws me a dubious look. I do, I say. But Hannah's wedding wasn't big, and yet it still represented what she and Remy are about. I cast my eye around the bland walls and the net curtains obscuring the west way beyond. This doesn't really say anything about either you or Henry.
But it will, once the tables are in and dressed and the flowers are in place. And besides, it's really practical for people getting here from home and there's lots of parking.
I scoff tragically. Tell me you didn't choose a wedding venue on how much parking it has.
It's important.
I incline my head at her, my eyebrows raised in a really sort of way. What's important is that you can look back with no regrets.
Do you mean about the choice of wedding venue or the choice of husband?
I know Kat's joking, but I can't find it in me to laugh.
B.
I pause, wondering how best to word my concerns about her husband to be. You don't think that maybe this place says something, subconsciously, about your feelings for Henry?
I don't think so, she says,
plumping down on the velour window seat. You don't have any worries at all about marrying him? I ask, sitting next to her. She shakes her head. No more than most. And the row at Hannah's wedding? I ask, hoping she doesn't brush me off again. Kat releases a long sigh before telling me. I got into my head that he was having an affair, or maybe not an affair exactly, but spending time with someone who could become significant, if you know what I mean. And? She shrugs. He denied it, and when I pushed him further, he got mad, and we ended up fighting about something petty instead. I don't even remember what it was. And you're confident that he was telling the truth, that there isn't anyone else? It's obvious from her reticence that she's not convinced.
I mean, what can I do? It's not as if I have any proof, it's just a feeling. I can't believe I agreed with Lizzie not to mention the rumour. Stupid, stupid me.
Isn't it a feeling you should be free of come your wedding day?
That would make sense, she laughs, dismally.
Because you can't begin your life together on a doubt. She turns to me.
You think I should challenge him again?
I don't see how it could hurt. If he really loves you, he'll reassure you. And if he's having doubts, isn't it better you know now rather than later? She laughs soberly. Aren't I meant to be the pragmatic one in this friendship? Yes, you are. So pull your shit together and let me be the ditzy one again.
Thanks, Bea, she says, putting her head on my shoulder. What would I do without you?
I place my hand on hers.
You'd figure it out, hopefully before marrying someone who might be a complete pilchard. I know he's not dementedly in love with me the way Jack is with Lizzie or the way Simon was with you, but that works for me, you know? I'd feel completely hemmed in with someone like those guys.
I understand. I felt something similar with Simon. But maybe there's a halfway house? Maybe someone exists who gives you that space but also nurtures you. Because, from where I'm standing, I don't really see Henry doing that.
I think he leaves all his nurturing at work. But maybe I do too. Maybe we're both as bad as each other. But does that make it right? She shakes her head. I don't know. And you're sure you're not marrying him just because he's South African and it means great holidays for life? Kat throws back her head with a laugh. It's New Zealand I'm crazy about, remember? Not South Africa. We sit for a moment, both of us with our own thoughts. Me thinking about Leo. She, I imagine, thinking how best to confront Henry. How did it feel seeing Simon with Edith at the wedding? She asks. It wasn't the easiest. I heard things are getting serious between them pretty fast. That doesn't surprise me. Though it doesn't make it any easier to hear. Simon wants a wife, and she looked like pretty good wife material to me. You don't regret breaking up with him? An image of Leo flashes into my mind. No. That sounds like a wistful kind of no. I hesitate for a moment before saying slowly. But not for the reasons you might think. So, enlighten me? I scrunch up my nose. It's been 2 weeks since I slept with Leo and he hasn't been in touch. She looks at me, surprised that I've kept this to myself for so long. Did you say he would be? I nod. Any idea why he wouldn't? I have a hunch. Which is? That he might have a girlfriend. Kat contemplates this for a moment, looking at me watchfully. What makes you think that? Just something about his assistant, the way they were together, and a comment a guest made about it being good to see them back together. But she could have meant them working together, right? Maybe, I say, tailing off. Someone messaged him the morning after we slept together. He rushed off saying it was complicated and that he'd explain later. But he hasn't. Nope, I say, wishing desperately that I knew who he'd dashed off to be with. I could live with the answer. It's the not knowing that hurts. Sounds like you've got some questions of your own to ask. Don't I know it? Because you don't want to start a relationship with a two-timing twerp. She's right. So why do I still feel so crazy about the guy? Do you? Of course not. It's just I can't quite get him out of my head. Kat falters before saying, If I'm honest, Bea, I don't really get it. He seems to pose more questions than he answers. I know it makes no sense, but... What? It's just something he said to me that made me think I might mean more to him than just a shag. What did he say? Something about me tripping him up and making it crystal clear where he's meant to go next. Kat nods and then, as kindly as possible, says, You sure it wasn't just a line? I shrug, not knowing, but hoping that it wasn't. We sit quietly contemplating how best to get to the truth, until Sue, Kat's wedding coordinator, arrives. Only 8 weeks until I do, she coos. I can almost feel Kat's restraint at not rolling her eyes. And as luck would have it, your photographer's just arrived. A dim recollection of Leo telling me that Kat had booked him for her wedding is forming when Sue says, And here he is now. I turn to see Leo, walking across the dance floor, looking hotter than ever, my heart rate off the chart. It's Leo, yes? Asks Sue, oblivious to my pounding heart and mind in overdrive. That's right, he says, shaking her hand. He cast me a quick, apologetic glance before kissing Kat on both cheeks. And this is Kat's bridesmaid, Bea, he says, looking at me with a coy smile and a glint in his eye, which makes me glance nervously away. Sue claps her hands together. Very good. Shall we start by showing Lee the venue? Then you can decide where best to take your formal photos. Let's do that, says Kat. But Bea, there's no need for you to hang around. Why don't you head to the coffee shop round the corner and we'll come find you after? She exaggerates we'll so heavily with her head slightly pitched towards Leo that there's no doubt in my mind that she's planning on sending him on his own. Good plan, I say, trying to sound casual, gathering up my things. See you in a bit. The 45-minute wait in the dismal coffee shop near the tube is torture. There are only so many emails you can reread, messages you can reply to, and Twitter feeds you can follow when your mind is half demented with thoughts of the man who slept with you and hasn't been in touch since. By the time Leo arrives, I've drunk 3 cups of coffee and I'm caffeinated to the hilt. Hi, he says, pulling out the chair opposite mine. It scrapes loudly on the linoleum floor.
Cad sends her apologies. She had to rush off to her final dress fitting. Right, I say, containing a laugh. It's such a plausible reason to anyone who doesn't know her, but to me it's a most blatant excuse to give us some space. Did you find somewhere suitable for the photos? He shakes his head with a little puff of resignation. It's not the most inspiring of venues. Even by Cat's standards, it's pretty basic. But we'll make it work.
We'll. Does he mean him and his assistant, or is he referring to himself and Cat?
There's a pregnant pause between us. I reposition the small vase of artificial flowers. I'll grab a drink. What would you like? He says, when the moment becomes uncomfortable.
To know what's going on here?
Nothing for me, thanks. I'm fine. He returns a few moments later with a large black coffee. My caffeine high is diminished and the vibe between us feels less stilted. How have you been? He asks. His eyes are full of warmth, but he keeps his seat pushed back from the table, a safe distance apart. Okay.
B, don't play it cool. Charles didn't. He told Carrie that he wished they'd wrung each other, that she ruthlessly slept with him and never called. You can do the same.
Though maybe a little confused, I continue. About why I haven't been in touch?
Right.
I'm sorry about that. I've been meaning to, but I thought it might be better in person.
Alarm bells start clanging in my head.
What might be better in person? I ask. Not certain I really want to know the answer.
Maybe Henry was right. Maybe it is kinder to be kept in the dark.
You remember my assistant, Britt? As if I could forget. Uh-huh. Our relationship is, like I said, complicated. Relationship. We work together, but we also... There's a slight pause while I feel my heart sink. We also have a kind of on-off relationship.
Okay, I say, my voice tight. Aunt Jane would not be impressed.
And were you on with her when we...
No,
he says quickly. Definitely not. But she messaged me that morning and I had to go. Not just because of her, but because... He falters. Like I said, it's complicated. Are you with her now? He nods. I'm sorry, B. I didn't mean for you to be caught in the middle. I don't feel caught, I say, using my best imperious tone. It was a bit of fun, that's all. We're both grown-ups.
Even if I do feel like running home and hiding under the duvet.
I'm glad you feel that way. A moment passes between us where unsaid words seem to hang above us like cartoon speech bubbles, the only trouble being that the words are unintelligible. If Leo could understand mine, he'd see that what I want more than anything is to climb back into bed with him and never let him go. I wonder what his might say. If I were courageous, I'd put my heart on the line and deliver a speech, just like the one Charles delivered to Carrie on the South Bank, when he told her he thought he loved her, but then realized how fruitless it all was, given that she was marrying Hamish. But I'm not courageous, and my life doesn't have a script to follow. So instead, I sit, nervously twiddling my fingers, wondering how best to end the meeting without showing how hurt I am. Because it does hurt. The truth is that I want him, and something, deep within me, tells me he might just want me too, even if he is with this strikingly beautiful Brit. As luck would have it, fate intervenes in the shape of a phone call from Aunt Jane. B, she says when I answer. Hi, Aunt Jane, I say, offering Leo an apologetic look. What are you doing on Wednesday afternoon? I'll be at work.
Not that that's much fun at the moment with Sir Hugh's ever-increasing forgetfulness and Simon trying to act as if everything's normal.
Can you take the day off? Probably, why? Because I'm getting married. She delivers this news completely matter-of-fact as if it were nothing out of the ordinary and warranted no reaction at all. What? I blurt. To whom? To Tom, she says, as if it's me who's lost my marbles. But I thought... Never mind what you thought, can you make it? Well, of course I can make it. Good, and round up those girls of yours too. Everyone's welcome. Jane and Tom, invite you to their wedding at Chelsea Town Hall and thereafter at the Palm Court for a celebratory afternoon tea.
Wednesday, 4th of July. Chapter 16.
This has got to be the most romantic wedding ever, says Lizzie, admiring Aunt Jane's small bouquet of vibrantly coloured ranunculi on the coffee table. I still can't get my head around their story. Did they really meet 50 years ago?
Incredible, but true, I say, adjusting my latest creation, a triangular fringe necklace of turquoise and purple beads and feathers in the mirror above the record player.
It couldn't have happened to a better person, says Hannah, who's relaxing on the corner sofa as much at home in Aunt Jane's flat as in her own.
Aunt Jane, you're such a card,
Kat calls through to the kitchen.
How could you keep this a secret?
Never mind me, says Aunt Jane, bringing through a tray full of iced drinks and strawberries, her floral apron tied around her wedding outfit. She's chosen an elegant, high-necked linen dress in navy blue and allowed me to choose her jewellery. I decided on a necklace and bracelet combo made of orange plastic that she's had since the 1960s.
What I want to hear about is you girls.
She hands out drinks to each of us.
Lizzie, how is married life? Should I be worried about what lies ahead?
It's more complicated than I imagined, says Lizzie, flumping onto the sofa next to Hannah, briefly exposing the coloured layers of net beneath her bright summer skirt. She's unusually downcast again today, and I don't know why.
What's the matter? I ask. Lizzie explains to Aunt Jane about Jack's tour offer and the time it would mean spent apart, even though he promised her otherwise. I'm still not completely clear why she's so upset about it.
And on top of that, he's backtracked on starting a family, saying he preferred to be financially stable before we have a kid.
That's not such a crazy idea, says Hannah, rubbing a tiny stain off the cuff of her floral chiffon dress. It's not as if the clock's really ticking.
It's a ludicrous idea, says Lizzie, irritably.
If there are two people on this earth more polarized in their opinions about money than Lizzie and Hannah, I'd be very surprised. Hannah catalogues everything she spends. Lizzie's more your spend and think later kind of girl.
Starting a family in your late 30s is far more exhausting and stressful than doing it when you're younger. And besides, I am financially stable. My job is secure. I've no intention of giving it up. We'd be fine.
But what if he's touring and you're left bringing up the kid on your own while trying to work full-time?
Asks Hannah. Sometimes Hannah really doesn't know when to keep quiet.
I'd manage. Lizzie sucks on her drink sullenly.
It sounds to me as if the two of you need to talk some more, says Aunt Jane. It reminds me of the time she used to counsel us about boys, always reassuring us that no one could be good enough to deserve the time and worry we were giving them.
Maybe it's not about the money per se. Perhaps he's not feeling secure about his own future. That's very important for a man.
Thanks, Aunt Jane, says Lizzie, finishing her drink with a slurp. And Kat, just 2 months until your big day. Are you excited? Kat fiddles with a bow of her high-waisted trousers.
I'm not sure excited is quite the right adjective.
Why not?
Let's say we're trying to resolve a few differences of our own.
Well, what can I say? It all gets easier with age.
Let's hope so, says Kat,
and they give her an affectionate squeeze on the shoulder. Despite her best efforts, she is no further forward with getting the truth out of Henry, making her more suspicious than ever.
What's happening with you and Leo, B?
Asks Lizzie. Last we spoke, she only knew of us sleeping together.
I thought after today we might be celebrating 5 weddings.
Well, if we are, it certainly won't be mine.
What's happened, B?
Asks Hannah. In all the excitement of Aunt Jane's spur-of-the-moment wedding, it hasn't felt appropriate to fill them in about Leo being back with Britt.
He's with someone else.
Not the assistant, says Aunt Jane.
Yes, sadly, the assistant. Bastard, says Kat, loyal to the last.
In truth, I don't think they were together at Hannah's wedding, so... I shrug. Anyway, they are now.
Has he rocks in his head?
Asks Aunt Jane.
Or his brains in his balls, says Kat.
I feel horrible for you, says Lizzie, reaching for my hand. I really thought he could have been the one.
Right, I say. That old adage.
Maybe I did too.
Maybe, but then again, maybe not.
Come on, Aunt Jane, look at us. The only one happy in our relationship is Hannah.
You've got to cheer us up with the story of you and Tom. I've told the girls most of the story, but we still don't know how you got back together. Who made the first move? What made you change your mind? And did Tom propose, or did you?
Yes, please, Aunt Jane, tell us,
pleads Lizzie, her hands clasped together. Even I could do with hearing it, says Kat. And romance and me are about as far removed as chalk and cheese.
Well, if you insist, says Aunt Jane.
She takes off her pinny and plumps a cushion to make herself comfortable on her chair. I phoned Tom a few weeks after his wife's funeral, when everyone else was returning to their own lives, and not forgetting Moira, but having no choice but to move on. The most I expected was a polite conversation, maybe a little fond reminiscing at most. What I didn't expect was for him to ask when he could see me.
Go, Tom, says Kat.
Aunt Jane casts her a playfully disapproving look.
Well, naturally, I put him off.
What? I say.
Why?
Christmas wasn't far away, it was a busy time, and I wanted him to think things through, be certain he wanted to visit his past when grieving for his wife. For all I knew, he wasn't thinking straight.
So then what happened?
Asks Lizzie, her hands on her cheeks already absorbed in the story. He called me on New Year's Day, said he couldn't wait any longer, and when were we meeting?
Love it, says Hannah. There's nothing like a persistent admirer.
And what did you arrange? I ask. We met at the Tate Modern the following week. I thought it was a safe option. If our meeting was uncomfortable, it would be easy enough to part without having to finish a meal or make some lavish excuse.
And was it uncomfortable? Asks Kat.
Aunt Jane throws back her head and laughs.
Not at all. It was as if we'd never been apart. We chatted on 10 to the dozen, barely stopping for breath. In the end, they had to throw us out of the cafe at closing time.
How romantic, says Lizzie with a sigh. Was he desperately sad at the loss of his wife?
Of course, he was sad, but he was also relieved. Moira had been unwell for a long time. He'd become her carer. The Moira he knew was gone well before she died. Kat allows Jane a moment of reflection to pass before she asks,
What happened after you were thrown out of the Tate?
We strolled along the river for a time. Hand in hand, I ask. I'm given a less cheek look and I yield, despite the desire to tease her some more. We parted and agreed to see each other again soon for dinner.
Dinner? Says Kat with a chuckle. Things must have gone well.
They had, and they continued to, until...
What happened?
Asks Lizzie, quite breathless with anticipation. After a couple of months, Tom tried to kiss me.
Again, Aunt Jane pauses.
And?
I ask, the suspense killing me, the others equally gripped.
I froze,
she says, laughing foolishly at the memory.
Why?
Asks Kat. Aunt Jane shakes her head a little. I was enjoying our get-togethers immensely, and it was clear that we both still had romantic feelings for one another. But I kept pushing those feelings aside, fearing I was too old for romance, too set in my ways.
But that's crazy, says Hannah.
Exactly my point.
Why would you think that?
Being single is all I've ever known. It wasn't easy to consider living differently.
So, what changed? Asks Kat.
It was something Beatrice said.
What did I say?
I ask, taken aback. You asked me if I believed in the one.
The memory of us chatting at her flat after Simon and I broke up comes back to me.
I knew in my heart that I did, but I couldn't allow myself to believe it. Even when you said, your life has always been rich and varied, and my heart immediately reminded me that something, someone, had always been missing. I still couldn't bring myself to be certain.
Aunt Jane pauses for a moment, appearing almost tired by the memory.
But then you mentioned marriage being about timing.
That old chestnut, says Lizzie with a roll of her eyes, and Aunt Jane chuckles.
But it got me to thinking that maybe this could be our time.
And? I ask. What then?
I plucked up the courage to invite him as my date to Lizzie's wedding.
Aunt Jane looks pleased as punch at this decision. But I made him promise not to make it obvious, to say, if anyone asked, that we were simply companions.
I bought that line, says Kat, selecting a strawberry. But then everyone knows you're completely oblivious to romance, says Lizzie.
Did you notice that they were together, Miss Bronte? Replies Cat, poking fun at Lizzie's love of romantic fiction. I was too preoccupied with my new husband, she says, her nose comically in the air. But wait, go back a step, I say. Were you more than just friends at this stage? Had you... I bottle asking about my aunt's sex life. We kissed after the wedding, she says, putting me out of my misery. Oh, that's so sweet, squeals Lizzie, at which point Cat throws a cushion at her. What can I say? All that mud and hay must have brought out some sort of natural instinct in us.
But then how come you weren't officially together at my wedding? Asks Hannah, never one to leave a thread dangling.
Aunt Jane shrugs a little. It all felt too new to tell. Tom had begun to stay over once or twice a week, and I loved sharing my life and home with him. It was as if, in some way, he had always been with me, always there at the back of my mind. And then he really was with me. It felt so personal, so momentous. I didn't want to share it. I dreaded losing what I dreamt of all those years.
How did you get from that place to your wedding day? Asks Hannah.
With her eyes full of admiration, Aunt Jane looks towards me. A little bird told me, you have to grasp love when you can. Grasp it now, it said. So I did. I rushed home to Tom, and it all came pouring out. I told him I wanted to marry him. I proposed, can you believe that? Me, a spinster all my days, proposed to the man I've loved since I was 23. Oh, Aunt Jane, I say, reaching out my hand to her. I couldn't be happier for you.
It's incredible, says Hannah.
Completely remarkable.
And so nice to know that love is patient, says Kat. That we should never give up hope, says Lizzie.
And that if it's meant to be, it will be, says Aunt Jane, looking directly at me.
I say, unconvinced.
But for now, I have the perfect antidote to all your heartache.
I raise an eyebrow expectantly.
His name is Christopher. He's one of my up-and-coming auctioneers, very charismatic.
Not another wedding date, I say despairingly.
Trust me, Bea, says Aunt Jane with a wink. This one's a goodie.
Chapter 17. The five of us pile into a black cab, full of nervous excitement and chatter, and make the short drive to the old town hall where Tom is waiting in a high-ceilinged room with heavy drapes and Queen Anne chairs.
Has she arrived?
He asks when I take my seat near the front with the girls.
Yes, I say. The wait is almost over.
Tom is surrounded by his children, their spouses, and his grandchildren, in varying degrees of patient expectation. One little girl in a frilly dress is swinging her legs, bashing them against the legs of the chair. There's a toddler staggering about at the front, and a slightly older boy slumped on his chair, desperate to be anywhere but here on such a beautiful summer's day. On Aunt Jane's side is a small hodgepodge of friends, young and old from different stages of her life. I wave at a few familiar faces from years gone by, mouthing that I'll catch up with them later.
You must be Bea, says a voice from behind me.
I turn to discover a man who's probably about my age but dressed in a three-piece linen suit and Panama hat, more suited to a man twice his age, and which certainly doesn't flatter his substantial bulk.
I'm Christopher, he lisps through a mouthful of protruding teeth.
Hi, I say, amazed at what Aunt Jane considers to be a goodie. Dave might have been a dork and Sebastian a bit bland, but Christopher surpasses both of them in the clearly not going to happen stakes.
Beautiful day for a wedding.
The very finest, he says,
over-enunciating every syllable, lisping on est, and spraying me with a shower of saliva.
And here comes the bride, I say,
relieved not to have to extend our conversation further.
Wonderful,
he exclaims, clasping his hands together in delight.
A definite keeper,
Cat whispers into my ear with a giggle. I give her a shut-up nudge with my elbow and turn my attention to Aunt Jane, holding her brightly coloured posy, which looks brilliant against her navy dress and goes perfectly with the chunky orange jewellery.
She looks amazing, says Kat. I hope I look that good at her age.
Tom's a lucky guy.
Guess he's earned it, having waited for Jane for 50 years.
Yes, I say, watching Tom's face as Aunt Jane arrives beside him. His devotion seems to radiate from every fibre of his being, and I find myself wondering if I'll ever be lucky enough to find someone like Tom. Someone who adores every inch of me, and whom I adore equally in return. Because right now, with Christopher apparently my only option, the odds do seem impossibly small. The feeling I'd stored in my memory bank of Simon kissing me comes flooding back, and I have to stop myself from wondering if I should have accepted his proposal after all. "Good afternoon, and welcome to the marriage of Jane and Tom," says the registrar. "Before we begin, I must ask if anyone knows of any legal cause why Jane and Tom should not be married today."
"Oh, goody, my favourite bit," says Aunt Jane, causing the guests to giggle. "Nobody?" she asks, after no one is forthcoming.
"Then we can begin," says the registrar with a smile. "Jane, please repeat after me." After the briefest of vows, Tom and Jane exchange rings.
"I give you this ring as a token of my love and friendship," says Jane, threading the ring onto Tom's finger.
"And I give you this ring as a symbol of our love, friendship and support, promising to love and cherish you throughout our life together."
The simplicity of their words and the conviction with which they're spoken causes my emotions to bubble over, and before I know it, tears are trickling down my cheeks.
"You big sap," says Kat, handing me a tissue as Jane and Tom kiss.
"It's just the perfect love story," I say through my tears.
Tom and Jane go to sign the register, a photographer documenting the moment.
"It feels odd to see a wedding photographer that isn't Leo," says Kat.
"You're not wrong."
I wonder where he is, if he's with Britt, and if so, what they're up to. My expression must give away what I'm thinking because Kat squeezes my hand and offers a supportive smile.
"Your turn will come," she says.
"Maybe," I reply, not quite able to muster the belief.
"Even if you do have to wait until your 70s, she teases.
"With my luck, I'll be dead and buried before anyone, let alone the one, comes along."
"Nobody knows exactly how afternoon tea came about, but the Duchess of Bedford is rumoured to have started it," says Christopher,
who Aunt Jane has none too covertly positioned next to me at our table in the luxurious Art Deco setting of the Palm Court.
"Who was the Duchess of Bedford?"
I ask, exchanging yawn glances with Kat across the circular table.
"One of Queen Victoria's ladies-in-waiting."
"Oh, really?"
I sip my champagne, trying to think of a reply. Queen Victoria's staff wouldn't be my first choice of specialist subject on Mastermind.
"Do you know why she invented it?"
"Dinner was served much later then, 8:30 at night, sometimes even later. The Duchess required sustenance mid-afternoon, hence afternoon tea."
"Which is always a treat."
"Mmm," he says, salaciously biting into a smoked salmon finger sandwich, leaving me feeling a little queasy.
Kat raises her glass at me from across the table with a playful smirk. I could swing at both her and Aunt Jane. Thankfully, midway through the afternoon, Aunt Jane and Tom decide to mix up the seating arrangement, so, at last, Christopher is moved to the opposite side of the table and a lady, about my age, named Jessica, sits next to me.
"How do you know Jane?" I ask, after we've established that Jane is my great-aunt. "I manage her auction house," she tells me, tucking her thick strawberry blonde hair behind her ears.
"Oh, really?"
I warm immediately to her gentle nature. Her unusual grey-blue eyes are full of kindness.
"How long have you been there?"
"I only moved down and started a few weeks ago. I think she took pity on me being the new girl in town, hence why she invited me here today."
"Don't be silly. I'm sure she invited you so you could get to know everyone."
Jessica casts a look towards Christopher on the other side of the table, then whispers,
"There are some people I'd rather not get to know."
I let out a laugh.
"You don't have to worry about Christopher. Aunt Jane is trying to set me up with him. He shouldn't give you any trouble."
"Oh, no, I," she says, taken aback. "I didn't mean like that. I just meant he's a bit full-on, and given we have to work together, I'd quite like to keep a distance. Personally, I mean. Besides, I think he's gay."
"Really?" I say, kind of surprised. But then it dawns on me what Aunt Jane is up to. I shake my head ruefully and hatch a quick plan of retaliation before my thoughts return to Jessica.
"Where were you before you moved to the city?"
"In the northeast."
And have you settled into London life?
Not quite yet. I'm still in a hotel. It's hard to find an affordable place to live.
I have a room that's available, I say,
a slight feeling of trepidation in my stomach. Living on my own has been quite nice these last couple of months. But if I want to give up work and concentrate on my jewellery full time, I need someone to contribute to the bills. And Jessica seems pleasant enough.
Oh, really?
She says, her large eyes lighting up.
Sure. Why don't you come round and see it? I'm in Acton, not too far from the auction house.
That would be great. Thank you.
What would be great?
Asks Aunt Jane, drawing up a chair beside us.
Jessica's going to look at my spare room.
Super, she says. Now tell me, how are you getting on with Christopher?
Quite charismatic, don't you think?
At this point, Jessica makes the wise decision of excusing herself.
I think he's extremely charismatic, I say, setting my plan in motion. In fact, meeting him makes me realize just how badly suited Simon and I were. It was obvious, the moment Christopher introduced himself, that I'd found my perfect match.
A moment of panic flits through Aunt Jane's eyes.
I'm definitely going to get his number, I say, enjoying winding her up.
In fact, I may ask him out for a drink this evening. It would be foolish to miss the opportunity.
B, Aunt Jane stammers.
Yes, I reply, doing my very best innocent voice.
Beatrice, Christopher is gay.
No, I say, feigning shock, allowing my mouth to drop open.
I was playing a little joke, Aunt Jane continues. Only to cheer you up, you understand. I thought you'd realize the moment you met him that it was a wind-up.
But Aunt Jane, why? I say, amazed at my ability to act.
Why would you do that to me after all I've been through? If I'd thought for one minute that you'd like this man, I'd never have done it. You must forgive me.
I take out a tissue from my clutch bag and pull my best woe-is-me face before very slowly allowing the tiniest glint to form in my eye, which Aunt Jane spots immediately.
Beatrice Henshaw, cries Aunt Jane. You scamp!
Me?
I cry back, slapping her on the hand, a broad smile on my face.
You're the prankster!
She laughs and dabs her eye with a hanky.
I just wanted to cheer you up.
Despite his eccentricities, Christopher is a very good man.
I believe it,
I say, squeezing her hand affectionately, making it clear that there's no hard feelings.
Now tell me, how are you? And how is Simon managing without you?
He's fine, I think. Happy with Edith.
And are you happy that he's happy with Edith?
I sigh, putting down my champagne.
I don't know. It does hurt a bit that he's moved on so quickly. And today, during the ceremony, I found myself wondering if I should have accepted his proposal after all. He used to look at me the way Tom was looking at you. He adored me.
But did you adore him?
I shrug. Perhaps I was mad to throw that away.
There's no denying that for someone who doesn't believe in the one, you do eliminate people very quickly. Nobody stands a chance.
Do I eliminate people?
She casts me an inquiring look. Simon, Dave, Sebastian. The only one you seem really keen on is this Leo, and from what I can gather, nobody seems quite sure why.
No, I suppose on paper it doesn't read well. Why would anyone fall for someone who is clearly a player and who slept with me when there was obviously someone else in the background?
It sounds far from ideal.
But there's something about his spirit that seems to fit with mine in a way that Simon's never did. Even with all his kindness, security, and devotion, I think about Leo all the time. I can't help it.
A smile twitches at the corner of her mouth.
The heart wants what it wants, Beatrice.
If you really think there's something there, you should fight for it.
I don't know, Aunt Jane. Didn't you say yourself that it's better to remain imperious?
Well, yes, but only when both of you are single. If he's with someone else, then you need to let him know how you feel, or else you run the risk of losing out completely.
But that doesn't seem fair to his girlfriend.
Aunt Jane raises her brow.
The operative word being girlfriend, not fiancé, not wife. Girlfriend. And trust me, she says, looking to Tom.
Nothing is fair when it comes to love.
Chapter 18. Jane and Tom's reception was a special affair, one that will remain in my memory for many